Hello, everybody. My name's Hitch, and I'm here with the See You on the Trail podcast. Wanted to sit down and have another podcast, have some more fun with you guys. Today, we've got a really cool show. We've got Levi Shirley on the hook with us. He's going to sit down and talk to us for about 30, 45 minutes and tell us about what he's got going on, some of the past and some of the history we have together. We've known each other since 2011. I've been watching him since he was about 15, 16 years old. So anyway, we're going to get started with that. First thing I want to let you know, guys, make sure you share this. We're on 10 different platforms with this podcast. Right now, currently, it's just an audio podcast. We do on our YouTube and on our Facebook page, we do pop up some pictures here and there to let you know what we're talking about. But want to let you know we are on Anchor Podcast is where we're based out of. This is our audio podcast only. We're also on Apple, on Google, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast, YouTube, Facebook, and Radio Public. So go check us out. If you don't want to go to YouTube, or if you have something that actually plays in the background while you're driving or something, and you can do other stuff on your phone, go to all those other podcasts, and you can just sit back and listen to it while you're scanning Facebook or whatever. I also want to let you know where we're going to be in person for the next month or so, couple months. April 6th and 7th, next weekend, April 6th and 7th, we'll be at Unlimited Off-Road Expo at the Racers Lounge at Texas Motor Speedway. The Racers Lounge was designed, I kind of came up with this idea about 3 years ago, to bring in racers that they're not exactly the big time racer guys, but they are people that are right up there trying to get to the cusp of it and really start to be competitive. We've got two rock bouncers and two Ultra 4 guys that will be doing it. Start out with, let's talk about the racers. The two bouncers that we have is BJ Allen. BJ Allen's been around for a long time. He had WFO built by Wide Open Design. And he'll have his car out there. He's a local guy to Dallas-Fort Worth area. And his car is just immaculate and beautiful. He's raced it a few times, but he always fixes everything and makes it look all pretty. So he'll be out there. Him and his son Colby will be out there signing autographs, giving rides, taking pictures, answering questions. And the next bouncer we have is Matthew Holt. Matthew is a newcomer onto the scene. He's been a part of it for a few years, but he's been building a car, a new car. And it's really neat to see him flourish. I believe that he drove all the way out to King of the Hammers. He's from Central Illinois, I believe. And he drove all the way out to King of the Hammers and ended up taking fifth, if I'm not mistaken. So he'll be out there with his High Society buggy. It's a really cool, like a turquoise bluish buggy that's got some really cool lines to it. So check that out. Ultra 4 Racers, I have Jay Eakin. He is a Ultra 4 / Dirt Riot buggy guy. He has a really cool older car. It's a Jim's Garage car that still works great. In fact, he ended up taking second last weekend at the Dirt Riot at Wolf Caves. So he'll be out there in it. In fact, I think he's actually going to travel down with me. He's going to come down from Bixby, Oklahoma, meet me in Norman, Oklahoma, and then we're going to all head down there together. And then second Ultra 4 driver is Quentin Hilburn out of Bentonville, Texas. Bentonville, Arkansas. And he's from Arkansas, but the car was built there at Tribe 4x4. It was originally built for Chris Summers, and then Chris sold it to Quentin, and he put in a really solid effort at KOH this year. From what I understand, I had a short talk with him on the phone. It was just a dumb electrical issue that took him out of the race, which the bad thing is about KOH, if you have the smallest thing go wrong, it's hard to catch back up and do the way, be competitive, because you've got to pass some cars, chase some dust to make it happen. So anyway, those are the four guys I've got that'll be there. They'll be there at the Racers Lounge. We'll have our separate area, and we'll be able to get a little aggressive with our driving. So it'll be a couple little demos, but we just can't tear up the concrete. So that's a big situation. But we'll be able to give a couple rides here and there. We'll be able to talk to you. take pictures with you, let the kids climb all over the cars, get to know the cars, get to know the drivers, take pictures with them, throw the kids in the car, get a picture with them. And that's basically what the Racers Lounge was designed to do, was to bring the fan and the racer a little bit closer together, to where you feel that you know that person. And it just helps the cohesiveness of the spectator versus the racer. And that's what the Racers Lounge is meant to do. So it's really cool to see. But we'll be at Texas Motor Speedway April 6th and 7th with those four racers. Next up on the list will be May 4th and 5th. We'll be in Nashville, Tennessee. And the more details I get on it, the more I'll let you know, guys. I know the last couple of podcasts, I haven't told you that. So I really don't know all the full details on it. We're still trying to work it out. We're still trying to get it to where we can actually do some burnouts and some donuts and stuff like we did in Louisville last year. But we've got some agreements that we have to figure out and get the A-OK on at the event complex that we're going to. Next up is June 14th. We will be at the Holly EFI Clash at the Crossbar at Crossbar Ranch in Davis, Oklahoma. This is one of my favorite places to go simply because it's only 45 minutes away from my house. This park is like an 11 or 12 mile race, and they do like, I think they do like 5 or 6 laps, something to that effect. There's plenty of viewing areas. It's a huge park. If you've never been wheeling there, I would highly suggest it. Me and Levi in this interview, we'll talk about Crossbar and how they go down there and just have fun doing it. Just going down there on their off time when they don't have to deal with the racing. But that's the plan for our schedule of events. A lot of you don't know who See You on the Trail is. See You on the Trail, we basically started out as just a guy with a video camera that wanted to videotape all his buddies wheeling. Well, then it just kind of evolved. And in 2010, I was approached by an Ultra 4 racer that I was friends with, that I wheeled with before See You on the Trail. And they asked me if they could, if I could help them try to get back in the action of Ultra 4 and XRA and all that, because their car had burnt down. So I jumped in and helped kind of in a social media aspect and started contacting vendors and stuff like that to try to help them. We got them back up and running. 2011, they raced KOH. So I went from there, and then I started doing the social media moderation. Now I do anything from event announcing. I announced KOH for about 3 years. 1 year I was the main announcer for the whole week. Two of the other years I was just a supporting announcer that would be in the pits or be at one of the obstacles. So anyway, did that. But I do vehicle wraps for the race cars, social media moderation. I helped with, I do photography, and some video production to help a race team, grow to be what they can be. That's basically what See You on the Trail is. So, let's go ahead and jump into the interview time. And I sat down and talked with Levi Shirley from Lucky Dog Racing. And enjoy it. Guys, listen to this. And we'll be back with you here in about, 30, 45 minutes, somewhere around in there. I don't know how long the actual interview is. But we'll be back with you, and we'll talk a little bit more about what kind of stuff we've got going on, and what are the new stuff with See You on the Trail you guys can look forward to. So here we go. We're going to jump right to the interview with Levi Shirley. All right. Hey, we're on the phone with Levi Shirley from Lucky Dog Racing. How you doing, man?
Good, Alan. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just got, I noticed you just drove in from the Stampede. You had what, 19, 20-hour drive?
Yeah, it's 27 hours each way. For the first time ever, I actually hit my trip button on the dash of the toter home. And I don't know if that was a good idea or not, but total time coming back, to total seat time, I had over 53 hours of driving. So to put that in perspective, that is probably the wrong thing for me to do. I've just kind of always mindlessly drove to these events and back and not worried about it and not really cared how much time it was actually taking me. And now it was like, holy smokes.
Yeah. Well, let's start out from the beginning. Let's start out with, how did you start racing and start getting into the off-road racing scene? Any kind of racing scene for that matter.
Yeah. So it kind of all stemmed off of my dad, with racing. He did a lot of horse jockeying in college and just to make a little bit of money, I guess. And that's kind of where his bug for racing began. And it eventually transferred to me. I grew up literally just watching him on Saturday nights down at the local circle tracks and just, when is my chance to be able to do this? You know, just any chance I got, I was trying to get behind the wheel of something. And that eventually bled into me getting my own go-kart when I was 8 years old and, doing really well with that and kind of moved into some not so serious miniature stock car racing, is like four cylinder stuff, nothing crazy at all. And that going into, the off-road, my family's always been very avid off-road people on top of that. And so when XRA came around, we were actually able to blend both worlds, more or less. Like saying, hey, we love going off-roading, we love racing, so why not combine the two? And at the same time, XRA popped up, and we were able to get involved in that. I helped Dad out for a year or two. Eventually got my own car when I was 15, and it was an old rock crawler.
Yeah, it was the Cadillac, wasn't it?
No, this one was a Schaefer Diablo, is what they actually called it.
Really? Cool.
Yeah, yep. It was a rock crawler that, like, made a name for itself in the rock crawling era and did really well, and I got it, and we changed some stuff on it. We, like, four-linked the rear, and very first race out, my very first off-road race, period, ever, behind the wheel, is I strapped in, it was XRA Alabama, strapped in behind the wheel, first 100 yards, carried way too much speed going down this little bit of embankment, and we had little, like, 1-inch Walker Evans shocks on it, you know, the rock crawler, and I got upside down and completely ripped the front end out of it, rolled down the hill, done. My very first off-road race it only lasted about 4 seconds. And I had a told car after that. So we ended up fixing it and racing the rest of the season. So,
yeah, I remember seeing pictures of that. That was pretty funny. It was funny. I shouldn't say it was funny, but.
Yeah, like at that time, it was super, it was a very big blow because, like, I don't know, it was very, like, I remember, like, my dad, like, literally sitting in the trailer just like, crying because he knew I was a good driver and he knew what I was capable of, and he just knew that it was just a bad deal, and he didn't want it to discourage me, and he didn't want people to look down on me for that to happen, you know, after that happened. So it sucked. It's all part of racing and learning and anything like that. At the end of the day, it made me that much hungrier. It made me work that much harder.
Yeah. Now you had that rig, you fixed it, you finished it for that season, and then you got another one seat buggy, didn't you? The one that I mentioned, the Cadillac, the Escalade.
No. So. From there, I purchased Rick Dermo's old XRA car, which was a Campbell Enterprise single seat moon buggy with a 3.8 liter supercharged out of like a Buick Regal, essentially 7RR4 Atlas, ORI shocks on it, wider tracks axle. So it was a Campbell chassis that Rick Dermo bought from Campbell's at that time and finished himself. And I raced that for a couple years in XRA. And then we got the Cadillac buggy, which was a hand-me-down from my dad. The Cadillac buggy was actually like number three buggy that Jamie Swarbrick wore, which who knows how many hundreds of buggies they've produced now.
Oh, geez.
It was the number three car that they had ever built ever. And so we started racing some distance stuff with that. And from there, we went into a Sniper Fabworks chassis.
Yeah, the 223, right?
Yep, the 223 chassis. And we actually it was 2010 when we started building. I was a senior in high school, and I had a company approach me about building a car for the Leukemia Lymphoma Society. So cool. And we got the ball rolling with Don Davis at that time with Sniper Fabworks. And we ended up racing the entire season and raffling that car off at the end of the season and donating a whole bunch of money to the Leukemia Lymphoma Society.
Yeah, and that's about when I met you, I believe, is when you had the that car. And you were giving it away. We did it. You did a couple dirt rides out at Copper Mines. And, yeah. I remember that. Do you remember the first time you ever met me?
It would have to be at Copper Mines if I were to guess.
No, to tell you that what's really funny about this is I'll remember this specifically. Cause I dated a girl here in Oklahoma City that knew that her sister dated you in Kansas. She was from Dodge City, but she lived in Oklahoma City. And I walked up to you one evening around the campfire at KOH. And I asked you, I said, "Hey, do you know this chick?" And you're like, "Well, yeah, I dated her sister."
That is funny.
That's the first time I ever met you. That was my first KOH ever. And then you came to Copper Mines. That's when they started blowing up with Dirt Riot and doing a lot of Dirt Riots. And I followed Dirt Riot for 3 years straight, I think. And it's kind of slowed down since then. But Leukemia Lymphoma Car, it's still driving and racing, isn't it?
I don't know about the racing. I believe last I knew it went to Topeka or Manhattan and in that area.
Yeah.
And I think maybe the guy that bought it was doing a little bit of rock bouncing or something with it.
Cool.
I don't know.
Awesome.
At all. But yeah, no, it's still around apparently.
That 223 chassis was probably, and as much as I like other builders, and honestly, Sniper didn't really have a lot of cars out there, but that was one of the strongest cars I've ever seen as far as chassis wise. I remember seeing your dad at, Salt Lake City, that Miller Motorsports Park, I guess what it was called.
Yep.
And your dad had a 223 almost exactly cookie cutter to yours, and he rolled it twice into the K rail and was able to get back in it and race it. And then comparatively speaking, on that same corner, Brad Lovell with the Lovell chassis, he did the same kind of roll, ended up on the K rail as well, but he wasn't able to finish the race. I was impressed with the Sniper Fab chassis. I wish they were still around.
We were sure impressed with them too. You know, we had our issues with them and everything like that, but for the most part, it was a very good chassis, because that's actually the same car that I'm actually racing Legends in now. So a car we built in 2011, and literally have raced it around the world, from all over the States to the UK and Portugal and back. And now we're still racing that same car in Legends class. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. That 223 chassis is pretty cool. I liked seeing you go to Legends this year. That was kind of neat. What was your drive to go to Legends? Why did you decide to do that as well do the 4400 and the Legends class? What made you decide to do both?
So my main push behind that was the fact that I was thinking, like, okay, what's a good way to pre-run the course? Every year we show up on race day and we have some silly issue from radio issues to just something. I want to be able to run the course and not have any issues. As far as pit logistics go. And so I was like, you know what? I own this car. Let's give it a shot. It's the cheapest way for me to get more pre-running in. And plus, KOH week is so hectic. It is ridiculous to try to get any pre-running on with what we have going on. We have the trophy trucks. We have the UTVs. We have the EMC. We have the 4400. So there's virtually no time at all to get any career I've done at all the week of KOH. So I was like, okay, what realistically was the car need? It needs new axle housings under it. It needs a few things improved, and we got to take shock off for a corner, and we got to run 37. We got some pretty good partners in all of those areas. So it's going to be the cheapest way to be able to do that. And on top of that, the car was basically no longer valuable as a 4400 car either
right.
at that point, because it was so dated. As far as just suspension and stuff, it would take so much. So why not step down class and maybe make the car worth a little bit more? I don't know if that's actually going to pan out or not.
You seem to do well at it. I mean, it was neat to see that old girl back on the track.
Yeah, totally. It was really, really fun to be back on that track and got to be back, with my roots in that car. I know that car well. I don't know how many hundreds of hours of seat time I probably have in that old car, but her and I have a pretty good relationship, so it was nice to get back on there, and it was just a good pre-running, and it did pay out. We had issues with our radios, and we had issues in a couple other areas that we kind of had to work out, and it was great pre-running.
Right, I got you.
For the main race.
Cool. Now, I'll ask you this, since you have, you basically drive both a solid axle and an independent front axle car. Does driving a solid axle make you a better IFS driver, or does IFS driving make you a better solid axle driver?
Let's have a tough one.
Are they just two completely different animals that you can't compare?
Yeah, they're two totally different animals that you can't really compare. And then on top of that, you kind of go from, you go from not having as good a steering as far as feel, but you have way more degree in the solid axle car that you can actually get up and around rocks and really kind of pirouette around rocks and kind of pick and choose lines and rock canyons at like King of the Hammers.
Mm-hmm.
Versus GIFS cars, so much better going faster with the full rack and pinion steering, I should say. It just has a lot better feel to it, and it's way, way better steering. It's just hard. There's no comparison. The stepping down to the 37s was probably my biggest, like, what I thought was going to be the biggest deal for me overall, because those rocks, the King of the Hammers, they get pretty dang big whenever you step down to 37s, and then climbing back into my big car on race day with 40s and a completely protected front end and everything like that, it was just like, wow, this made a big difference. I wish I would have had 40s on the legend car.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've never actually, to tell you the truth, I've been in I've been in three Ultra 4 cars, only in the passenger seat. I take that back. I have driven Aaron Peters 223 chassis, and I did back Derek West off the trailer one time, but I was also in Clay Gilstrap's car when it used to be Cheeky Barton's before it was completely finished. We took a ride down the street with Adam Shear, I don't even know what to compare it to be in a car. Whether I don't think I'd ever want to off road race, to tell you the truth, it beats the crap out of you.
It does. We always joke. I'm like, the only way to train for off-road racing is literally strap in with a UFC fighter and just get the crap kicked out of you for about a half hour to an hour straight, or 10 hours in King of the Hammers. So that's probably the only way to train for it, is just strap in with a UFC fighter and just get beat to death.
Wow, I took a ride with Derek at King of the Hammers my first Hammers year, which was 2011. And I had to tell the co-driver was driving, Jason Henney, and I had to tell him to slow down because it was starting to hurt, like right in your chest. He was hitting the whoops so hard. I was like, no, I'm done. Let me out.
I was really impressed with my 3-inch King IVP in the race car. But when we first started out, I was hitting whoops. Like before we had the car tuned, whatever, the spring rates were off and the valving was off. I was feeling that exact same feeling, like it just hurts in your chest. It's just kind of hard to explain. And I'm like, man, it's been a while since I felt this feeling. Going on an IFS car is just, they ride and drive so much better across that stuff to where it doesn't hurt you, and you can drive for that much longer and that much harder.
Yeah, well, I've talked to Lauren before, Lauren Healy, and he said driving an IFS car is like cheating.
Yeah. It is like cheating, just about. And it's funny, though. at the Stampede this past weekend, Dad and I were going back and forth on stuff, and he sent me a chart, and he said, okay, well, list how many solid axle cars in this out of the 25 that are in there. And I'm looking at, like, I can see one. He's like, yeah, there's two out of 25. There's two solid axles to you know, 23 IFS cars.
Wow.
I'm like, holy smokes. You know, everybody is stepping up and everybody's getting that much more competitive. You know, the pace has totally changed.
Yeah, that's actually amazing, because whenever I went, the ratio to solid to IFS, I mean, back when I started following Ultra 4, the IFS was the, there was like three.
Yeah.
And now it's just, it's amazing. And I guess, I mean, the technology's improved, the technology has improved. And then on top of that, is it still about the same price now, or price of an IFS, has it actually dropped down tremendously or at all?
It's all, I don't think it has changed one bit.
That's crazy.
It's just as expensive as it was, if not a little bit more expensive, because, you know, now we're getting into the point where we're having to have stuff heat treated and shoppinged and better material. And I mean, it's just insane how much technology has really come from the sport the past 5 years.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. Now, you mentioned Stampede. Let's go ahead and talk about the most recent race, the Stampede. You just got back home from yesterday, I believe. Tell us how your race went, man.
You know, it went well. We had a really good prelim. We tossed up back and forth with Mike Bergman. Ended up second place in the prelim, which set us up pretty good for the main. And in the main, there was one spot on the track. I don't know if anybody else followed that. It was like a little uphill rock section everybody was losing tires on. And I kind of got flustered a little bit and got off my line, got to the right, smacked the tire really hard against the rock, and ended up cutting the tire. And about probably lap four, that happened. And out of 12 laps, you got to do. And so I ran up a flat for another lap, came in, pitted, and anytime you got to pit any of those races, you're done. I mean, you're on a minute and a half laps, you know, minute 50 laps, I should say. And if you take a minute changing a tire, which is pretty easy to do, you know, we're not quite the NASCAR level,
right?
You're done.
Yeah, you're backed up in those short course races. You can't, if you have to pit, you're fighting to get back. And so, I mean,
yeah.
What'd you say, lap five? You took a pit.
Yeah, lap four or five, I took a pit and took a tire and got back out there and was just literally chasing down guys and trying to get around people and pass them. And I ended up ninth overall. So it sucks. It's a bummer. It's not like, you know, obviously that, you know, I'd be bumped out second place too. So, I mean, at any point, you know, if I'm not winning, I'm disappointed, more or less. But, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, flat tire and take you out of a race. And we had a lot of hard work leading up to that to get to that point.
Yep.
And we were gaining, we were chasing people and track, getting them, you know, run down, and we just had a flat tire, which is bad luck, and that's just part of racing.
Yeah. Oh, and what was really funny, you talk about that, and one of the last races I saw you at was Davis last year. You had a tough roll. You end up rolling in Davis during qualifying, and that started you at the back of the pack, and you came back, and I believe that was probably the longest and most stressful 20 minutes that Lauren Healy has ever had to deal with.
Yeah, I would probably guess so. It was crazy. Yeah, we started dead last that race. That's one of those races I'll never forget. And I consider Davis one of my home tracks, because it's, you know, 5 hours away,
right?
Because I'm literally driving everywhere. And yeah, we started clear to the back, yeah, after rolling qualifying. And I'm a guy that loves to chase. Like, I hate being chased. I literally love to chase. So it is like, that's my element. And we ended up getting outrun by Lauren Healy after starting dead last, 51 seconds or something total. and Derek West outran me by 20 seconds, I want to say. So just crazy at that level of racing, how we're that close. Like, it's just crazy.
I mean, that's a 4 or 5 hour race, and you were within 51 seconds of the winner. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It was funny. I was sitting at the finish line with your dad, and I actually put him on live feed, I think, on See You on the Trail. And I was like, well, how close are we? And he's like, we're really, really close. And I could see Lauren and Derek over there just shaking their head, waiting for you to come in. And I'm sure you were hauling balls trying to get home.
Yeah. And nobody ever told me where we were at. as far as that goes, nobody told me that we were that close. They just said, don't let anybody pass you. So I was keeping everybody in my rear view, man.
That's awesome. What do you think about Crossbar Ranch? Do you like that track?
Yeah, I absolutely love that track. I mean, I like going down there just to wheel and have fun anyways. And yeah, no, that's probably one of my favorite tracks to date, because it has a little bit of everything. It has some open, and then you're back in the woods. And it's just, then you're kind of back on a little short course. And man, it's just an absolute ball. It literally one of my favorite tracks I've ever raced at.
Yeah, and it's one of my, I would consider my home tracks as well, because it's only about 45 minutes from my house. So, what's really
pretty
cool is
for us Midwest boys.
Yeah, exactly. And what's really cool about that track is it actually is owned by the city of Davis, and then it's owned by the city of Davis, and then a program or a promoter actually took it over, and they lease it from them. So they still get some of the Davis help as far as maintenance and stuff. So that makes it the amenities a little bit better and a little bit nicer. So I had somebody ask me on another forum on Facebook, Rock Buggies or something. They were asking about Crossbar, and I said, "Man, it's awesome. It's huge too. I think it's 5,000 acres."
Yeah, absolutely. No, we have ball going down there on our off weekends whenever we have a chance to take razors down there and just have fun. And it's kind of a double whammy for me too, because I got to do a little bit of free running too.
Exactly.
if they would ever release the course, I could consider it free running, but you pretty much know what obstacles they're going to use.
Yeah, exactly. So, in your, let's go ahead and talk about just a little bit of your personal life. I mean, you live in Dodge City, Kansas. You do have a day job, correct?
Yeah, kind of.
What do you do?
So I primarily race. That is pretty much what I do. And I do a little bit of other things on the side. My wife and I started a little sign company that we build all sorts of signs, and we have a plasma cutter that we build. Anytime anybody here locally needs bracket or anything like that built, I am the guy to come to with the plasma cutting. So, and on top of that, I consider us kind of recreational ranchers. On top of that, we got only about 40 head of cow, and you know, they obviously need quite a bit of attention too, and so that takes up a pretty good chunk of our lives too.
Cool.
So, but other than that, I've kind of put myself in a position where I can, play the race car all day.
Yeah. Cool. That's very cool. And now you've got a new youngin, your first kid as well.
Yep. Dawson Payne Shirley. He's 4 months old today, I want to say. And so, man, that has been a ride like I've never, been a part of. That has been a really, really cool deal. Like, you know, a year ago, if you were to ask me, hey, you ready to be a dad? I'd say, absolutely not. There's no way. I'm not mature enough. I'm not, I don't have my life together. You know, I want to wait. And, so ready or not, here we come. And now we're 4 months in, and I absolutely love it. I would not change it for the world. That little boy means the world to me, and it's just, and my wife and I, and it's just, it's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
So I'm very glad.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I have one child, and just wait till he gets to where you think the infant stage is horrible. Sometimes you're like, I gotta get up early, gotta get up late, stay up late, whatever. And then once he gets to the point where he's a toddler and you have to chase him around, that's another story. But and then whenever he gets into the age when you can actually have a conversation with him is it's unreal. I was the same person 14 years ago whenever I had my first kid, and man, I wouldn't change it for the world. We actually Last weekend we went to I took him out to Doug Jackson's place, and Doug took us up. Yeah. Doug took us up in the airplane, and we had a ball. He wouldn't say anything. He was so in awe of everything. So we went and flew around rednecks with paychecks. Now, you've got some more races planned. Are you running East Coast and West Coast Ultra 4, or are you just running West Coast?
You know, I am running whatever I feel like this year, which is going to be a little bit of West Coast and a little bit of East Coast. And it's going to be an interesting year. You know, I started off, we were starting up Emmers. My last race was in NorCal. And my next race is more than likely going to be Tennessee before the first East Coast race. So we'll see whether I want to chase East Coast or West Coast. The only reason I would not chase West Coast would be the running down at San Felipe. It just kind of, I've never been to Mexico, and it's a pretty big learning curve, and it's an expensive learning curve. And I know people do it all the time, but yeah, it just makes me a little bit nervous to take my entire livelihood down there. And to never have been down there is a little scary. So that kind of doing a kind of, and I think a lot of people feel that way, because Ultra 4 racers have always raced, you know, has always raced stateside more or less. My little bit of European racing, which, I mean, that's its own animal. So to go down there with no help, and I mean, just take the major, major crew to go down San Felipe, and I feel like a lot of people, other people feel that way. There's a reason they're probably not committing to the West Coast just because of that race. But if we decide to race it, I'll put my best foot forward and man up and, yeah, try to make the best out of it. But from there, we're racing at Davis at Crossbar, and we'll probably be racing the rest of the East Coast from there, really, and then Nationals in October.
Cool. That sounds awesome, man. I'm glad you're attacking Ultra 4 like you are, man. I remember you used to do a lot of Dirt Riot, but, I mean, Dirt Riot's kind of dwindled a little bit. I would love to see them more doing more Central Series stuff. So, for one, I wouldn't have to drive as far, and neither would the racers. There's so many Ultra 4 guys that would do great in Dirt Riot, and it's just there's maybe one or two races, and they're all down in South Texas.
Yeah, absolutely. And we had a good time with Dirt Riot for a very long time. And honestly, I would owe Dirt Riot to being the level of being able to drive at the level that I do nowadays, because we there for 3 or 4 years hit every single Dirt Riot we possibly could, which was like 10 or more a year for 2 to 3 hour races. So that is a lot of speed time. And that's the only, I mean, that's how you get better is getting behind the wheel. And I would attribute Dirt Riot to a lot of that.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk of, I mean, with Dirt Riot kind of going down, they're not having as many races anymore. There's been a lot of talk about maybe making a minor league Ultra 4, where you have to qualify to be in the major leagues of Ultra 4 to be able to do those main races. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think that's a good idea, or are you fine with having, you know, those guys at KOH that just want to do the bucket list, they race to finish, they don't race to win. Which is different for you and different for Lauren, different for Jason, different for Shannon, of those guys. What do you think about having a minor league?
Yeah, like every place needs a series to grow from. You know, look at, you got to get people, you can't just throw them into the ringer. Like, you can't just throw them in there and just expect them to know everything and perform at a level that everybody else is, you know, without getting burnt out or hurt or whatever. So they need that. You know, every other sport has a entry level. You know, if you look at motocross, for instance, that little kid can get on that bike, you know, that 50cc motorcycle, and start when he's 3 years old, work his way up through the ranks, and maybe someday dream of racing supercross or, you know, AMA motocross or anything like that.
Right.
So we need that to keep feeding racers and keep, you know, give people a place to start and to grow too. And so I would support that. I think that's a very, very important, because like I said, we need a place to get people a start, because it would be very intimidating from the outside looking in going, gosh, you know, like man, Lawrence Healy or Jason Shirley, like man, those guys have it together. And you look at Campbell's, they have, you know, Monster Energy sponsorships, and you have their big semi hauler, and man, they've got everything figured out. You know, they like, there's no way I can compete at that level. And it's like, not until you really get thrown into it, you start realizing like, okay, yep, I'm getting better. I can start maybe competing with those guys and getting better. And it wasn't until, you know, Ultra 4, I started racing a lot of Ultra 4, where I really, really got way better, is because to be the best, you definitely got to race to get the best. And I was pretty fortunate to race in dirt ride and kind of have that starting and get that D time and gain the confidence and then move into Ultra 4. It was a pretty seamless transition.
Right. No, and I tell that to a lot of guys. I had a friend of mine, he bought a race car and he thought he could compete big time into Ultra 4, just literally jump into it. And I told him, I was like, man, you need probably 2 years of Dirt Riot. When it was hot, when they were doing 12 races a year, you need Dirt Riot to get your seat time to understand the car. And that's one thing I like about watching you guys, Lucky Dog in general, you and Brian, watching Derek West, Shannon Campbell, they all started, you guys all started grassroots. You guys all just started wheeling, and then you started We Rock, and then you started into XRA, and then you moved into Dirt Riot. And now you guys are in Ultra 4, and you guys are all running at the top of the food chain right now. I mean, you're doing well. I think it has a lot to do with seat time. Seat time is key. Seat time, yeah, and prep time.
And to develop, like, you got to know what parts work, what parts don't work. And it's just so crazy that what we can do with these cars nowadays is just literally, they call it Ultra 4 for a reason, because they are literally like the coolest, you know, motorsport ever. You know, a lot of people drool at like trophy trucks, a lot of people drool at like Formula One, a lot of people drool at like, you know, at NASCAR. Well, the cool part about Ultra 4 cars is the fact that we can literally race anything. You know, like I always say, like, you know, Ultra 4 cars, like our claim to fame is that we can do everything half-assed. Like, we are the king of that. Like, we can go desert racing, kind of. You know, we're not the fastest guys out there, but we're getting to be.
Right.
So we can go short course racing. Again, not the fastest guys out there, but we can go do that. You know, we can go around Pikes Peak. Not the fastest, but we can go do it. So just the point I'm making is the fact that we can have this one car and do all this stuff, and it's just so dang cool. And to see where we came from in 2006, 2007 to where we are now is just crazy, technology-wise, and how much faster we're really getting to be.
It's crazy. I remember talking to Randy over at Jimmy's, and me and him had a video idea, and this is back in 2011, 2012. We wanted to do a video with Ultra 4 cars and start out on the quarter mile, then go to the dirt track, go do this, go do that, go do all forms of racing to prove that these cars can do anything that you want them to do. It's awesome. And they're multi-purpose. Who was it that, Rob Mack said it in one of the Ultra 4 videos, one of the old movies. It said, there's two things that can get you in a desert race, and there's 1,000 things that can get you in the Ultra 4 race, in the King of the Hammers. So very cool.
I would 100% agree with that.
But now you got your ranching job, you got your plasma cutter stuff here, there in Dodge City. And you race full time. Who do you have that partners up with you and helps you get to all these races and sponsors you and takes care of your, I mean, obviously you're, mainly sponsored by Max's Tire. But who else do you have that tell us about your car, basically, I guess is the question I'm asking.
Yeah, so I have a lot of people that help me get to the races, and I mean I could literally talk for the next hour about just all the different parts in the car and everybody that's involved that has hands on that car to make sure it succeeds, and you know that I'm successful, and you know we run a successful program. And but the main players are definitely my friends, my family,
awesome,
and my sponsors. You know, I definitely couldn't do it without my friends and family. Like, a lot of people don't see it, the fact that they're here, they're spending their free time, their weekends, and help me wrench on the car, and then on top of that, help me go to these races and traveling with me, and like that to me is one of the most important parts of my racing, is the relationship with those people, and the fact that I am very, very appreciative of those people, because without them, I just could not do this at the level I'm doing this by myself. Like, yeah, maybe I could do it once a year or something like that, but to run a full season by yourself, that's pretty much impossible. There's no way to possibly do it without that. But as far as sponsors go, Maxxis Tires, I've been with Maxxis Tires since 2000 and I was officially a sponsored athlete, I want to say, like, in 2010, but my dad had been with them since 2007. And it's funny, we have a poster hanging up in the shop from, like, that XRA era, and I had my Diablo car, and I was the very furthest most back rig out of that entire poster. And everybody else was in front of me, their main sponsor, Maxxis guys. And I just kept my head down and just kept on working. I just kept climbing that ladder, more or less. And now I'm looking back and going, you know what? I am Maxxis's number one motorsports driver, more or less. And right. That's pretty cool to reflect on and go back to. You know, they have guys like Brock Egger and Jeremy McGrath and everything, and then I'm right up there with them. Like, that is pretty dang cool. And then I partnered up with a lighting company here a couple of years ago called JW Speaker. Everybody, like, hears that name, they automatically go, JW Speaker, what kind of speakers do they make? And it's like, no, they're a lighting company, and they're one of the best in the world. They literally build lights for everything you can possibly imagine. You would never even realize it. They build lights for Harley, John Deere, Case, and those are just a couple of the people. I mean, every single side-by-side you see, from Polaris to Can Am, they build the headlights for.
Awesome.
So nobody realizes, like, the level that JW Speaker really is. And then they build all the lights that we run on, like the Sleepster build that we do, the JK replacements, the JL replacements. Like, so they're very, very vital. They build the lights there in front of our semis. So it's just unreal to be working with a company at that level as well. And then on top of that, we run King Shocks. King's been a great partner of mine for the past 4 years, I want to say. And they've been a great company to work with and for. And yeah, there's really not a better shock out there. Now, on top of that, then we got Spider Tracks, which build great axles. They literally the best axles on the planet. People talk about other companies, but there is no other companies in my eyes. It is literally Tom with Spider Tracks is one of the best guys you'll ever meet in your life. And he has been supporting the sport like crazy for the past. Since day one, literally, like, 10, 15 years now.
Yeah.
And he's not afraid to spend money in the sport, and it is just, man, he builds the best axles you could possibly imagine. You know, and I could go on wheels, my transmission, my transfer case, but, you know, end of the day, nobody probably wants to hear me go on about that stuff. End of the day, I really, really appreciate every one of my sponsors that helped me out, and my wife, my family, my friends. It's just I really couldn't do it without any of those guys.
Yeah,
that's very, very vital.
That's very cool, man. Well, I appreciate talking to you. You've got the rest of the season to go through, and I hope for the best. And I hope you end up. You need to get a win, another win under your belt, man.
Yeah, I know. Everything is, we're coming. Everything pretty easy to be, down on yourself when you're not winning or whatever. But end of the day, we've been very successful at what we do. And we have won a lot of races in Europe and here in the States. And it's just, it's crazy because it's anybody's day at anybody's time, on those, on the wins. And really no one person in particular is running off with anything in general. It's just everybody has success at different points, and it's just, we're still working for it. And I'm a firm believer in the hard work works. You get what you put in. I spend every waking moment trying to be faster and trying to improve, and we don't let grass grow underneath our feet, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I remember one of the, we did an interview back in 2012 at Sniper Fab, and I remember you saying the motto of Lucky Dog Racing is never quit. You guys, even if you're running at the back of the pack, you still won't throw in the towel. You continue to finish every race, which makes you consistent, which makes you a hard worker and somebody I like watching. I'm always rooting for you, man.
Thanks, man. I sure appreciate it. I appreciate you taking the time to do a little podcast with me today.
Oh yeah. Hopefully we get this out there and you guys can have some fun and you can get the racing going and basically enjoy Ultra 4 the way you guys have been doing it for years. So anyway, well, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for taking the time. We got we'll get this up and going so everybody can hear it. And we'll talk to you later, Levi. I appreciate it.
Cool. Thanks, Al. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye. All right. Thank you, Mr. Levi Shirley from Lucky Dog Racing. Wish you the best. Hope that you do very, very well this season. Looks like you're attacking it well. In closing, guys, I want to let you know, again, the places that we are available for this podcast. If you don't want to watch, like on YouTube or Facebook, like I throw pictures every so often, if you don't want to watch that, you're welcome to download our podcast on Anchor, Apple, Google, Spotify, Breaker, Overcast, Pocket Cast. And then remember, we're on YouTube, we're on Facebook, and then we're also on Radio Public. We're also on Twitter. And when a YouTube video gets uploaded, Twitter goes ahead and repeats it and says it's out there. So basically get with us, follow us on Facebook, follow us on YouTube, follow us on Instagram. We're actually on Instagram as well. And also Twitter. We put out different stuff, for different social media platforms. So what you see on Facebook isn't always what you're going to see on YouTube, Twitter, or Instagram. I try to put out different stuff to engage other people. And so it makes you, honestly, to tell you the truth, it makes you want to subscribe to all of our platforms to enjoy what See You on the Trail has to offer for you. So I do have some hats now. I'll post up a picture on Instagram or and Twitter and Facebook, let you know I have them. I don't have a lot of them currently. Basically, I'm going to give these all back to people that have given me shirts over the years and why I have a full closet full of black racing shirts. No, I'm just kidding. Not all of them are black, but a lot of them are. But that's what keeps me clothed. I had a lot of racers and a lot of teams and a lot of product people that gave me shirts. And so I'm trying to pay them back and help them out with an extra hat maybe here and there. So other than that, we will see you this weekend. We will be at the Unlimited Off-Road Expo at Texas Motor Speedway. And then in May, we'll be at the Unlimited Off-Road Expo at Nashville Fairgrounds is what they're calling it, I believe. I'll have another holding a set of racers that'll come there and do basically the same thing we did at Texas Motor Speedway. And then if you happen to be in June 14th at the Clash at the Crossbar for the Ultra 4 race, would love to see you guys there. This is one of the, this is actually the only really central series race that'll happen with Ultra 4. So make sure you get down there and see it. I think it's $25 to get in, something like that, and well worth it. If you've never seen an Ultra 4 race, if you don't understand it, it's a grassroots racing series such as, the only other way to compare it is there's not any other way to compare it, to tell you the truth. You can actually walk amongst the pits, and you can talk to those racers. You can sit down and ask them questions. You can just gawk and look at all of their race car stuff, everything on their race car. They aren't, and not one person in Ultra 4 is too proud to talk to you. They will, they'll answer anything for you. Ultra 4 or Dirt Riot. Dirt Riot's the same way. You can walk around in the pits, have a good time. There's usually really good viewing areas at all the races. Ultra 4 and or Dirt Riot, and to add on to that, We Rock's the same way. We Rock is more of a cone dodging sport, but that's where everybody stemmed from, I believe. So anyway, we do appreciate you watching. Make sure you like the page, like our Facebook page, like our YouTube page, like this video. Share it if you can. I would appreciate it. You guys can share it and basically help us grow. We want to make this one a this podcast one of the best in the off-road industry. I don't think I'll ever be able to surpass people like, you know, Adam Carolla or Joe Rogan guy. But as long as we can be one of the number ones in the off-road industry, that's what I want. We've got a lot of cool people coming up in the next few episodes. I'm going to have Brandon Powell on the show. He's from Southern Missouri Off-Road Ranch. This next week, I'm probably going to have Axel and Marvin Stammel from the Unlimited Off-Road Expo. I'll have them on the podcast as well. I did talk to Kenny Forbes. Kenny said, heck yeah, anytime. So I got to sit down and talk with him. The Campbell family, Campbell Racing, that's another one on the books to be able to get a good interview with. Armando Verdugo from R-Tech Industries, he's one on the books. Leo Donnell is a new one. He used to race monster trucks and has moved into the Ultra 4 realm. So it'd be good to sit down and talk with him and compare and contrast what the difference is in the race series that he used to do and now what he does. So anyway, other than that, guys, I'm going to quit rambling. I'm going to get off here so you guys can get on with your day. I do appreciate listening, and we will see you on the trail.